If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Welcome, Max Grinnell. Welcome back to the whatever Rick Kogan show I have.
Rick, always a pleasure to be back.
Max has ever intrigued me. I guess we met when you were still in college, right?
Yeah, a few years ago.
Well, but you, it's your fascination with history. It's your life, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, telling the stories of Chicago, the places I visit, the places I travel to, this is my passion, getting down there on the ground.
And you give tours.
I give tours. Started a business last year. We're doing walking tours in Chicago and Boston, where I hang my hat part of the time. Some exciting tours coming up in May.
You know, we'll promote. Yeah, you're going to hear for the whole hour. What I want to get at, you'll often hear from people about, and I don't know if they're just skimming the surface, but you'll often hear from people, oh, Boston, that's so much like Chicago. Oh, Chicago, that's so much like Boston. You are an expert, and I'm asking you, are there similarities and what are they?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think of the people that came from New England, a lot of the early captains of industry in Chicago, these are, you know, the people who made some of Chicago's key culture institutions, and they brought those traditions with them. And I always think of, you know, H.H. Richardson. I mean, this is one of those, you know, an architect, Flesner House to Trinity Church, among others.
So, because I think the sort of the recognition of Boston's influence here, just because we're Chicago and we think we grew everything here, is kind of, if not ignored, a little underrated. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's why I try to, you know, bring those connections together. I mean, that's part of what gets me so excited about those things. It's just, you know, how do you find this? Is it architecture? Is it people? Is it ideas? Is it, you know, an art exhibition that's informed by work in those two places?
Yeah,
I mean, that's...
Well, it's all those things. I mean, that's what makes a city, I think, and you are a great preacher for this. That is what makes a city alive. I am looking at your book. Can people buy this book anymore?
They can buy 24 Great Walks in Chicago online only. I wish we could tell you it was at a bricks-and-mortar bookstore, but it's in publishing limbo right now. It's betwixt and between.
That's okay. When did you write this?
2009. And it was written for a British publisher. Farmers picked it up, and right now we're trying to get it back out there again. But this book was finished seven years ago. And there's stuff that's changed. I mean, some stuff remains.
Glesner the Heart of House. Heart. Valoy Cafeteria is still there. Pizza Capri is still there. Ribs and Bibs is still there. This is a lovely, lovely book. You went to the University of Chicago. That's one of your affinities for Hyde Park, isn't
it? It is true. And as people say, when they find out I went to USC, they say, you're too socially well-adjusted.
And they're right.
Yeah. I can hold the conversation.
What is it, Max, that first hooked you on history? I mean, I was just, you know, the guy I had in recently in the 9 o'clock hour, we're talking about his novels that are sort of historical novels based on the Holocaust, and I realized that you could go as some eighth grader and go with the Holocaust, but they wouldn't have a clue. What is it that makes history and made history so important to you?
I think it's...
Was it a teacher, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had early influences. Went to high school in Seattle, and AP teacher who I'll never forget, who passionate about the subject. And also, I think these walks. I mean, we are disconnected from the here and now, and I'm the same way. I'm on my phone. It's a condition of our time. But to get out there with the connection, and even making, I was having a burger and a beer at Moody's a few weeks ago after one of these talks, and I looked at the bits and pieces of stuff in the building, of course, you know, dark and appropriately moody. And I asked the guy behind the bar, said, you know, some of this stuff looks like fragments I've seen in Old Town. He said, yeah, from 61 to 71, this was on North Larrabee.
Yeah.
The building was torn down and moved all the stuff over. So to me, those little moments, that's the starter.
It enriches the experience of place, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing to think about, you know, as we sit in the Tribune Tower and we sit in these blocks, these six blocks north of the Chicago River, I mean, there's a dozen books written on the subject, and most people wouldn't know to look up at 543 Michigan and say, who is that those pair of elegant women carved in limestone? It was a millinery shop. Yeah. And that was a big deal when it was finished in 1926.
See, I think it's almost as if some of that stuff, because of, and I think basically because of high technology, where you can just get any fact with, you know, a few clicks of your phone, you're removed from the physical world, though. And that's where it's interesting to me.
Yeah, and people, as I always tell my students, as a urban studies wonk from time to time, people are paying a premium to live in cities. And conversations about gentrification, equality, going on here, New York, Boston, for God's sake, is what are we paying this premium for? Marble countertops and views. I mean, part yeah. of it for some people who can afford it.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, there's this, it's also low cost. I mean, the exploration of the city, you have feet you can walk, you can do.
It's there for the taking.
And the Chicago Public Library.
But I also think, and this is why I'm glad you're on, and I want you to, after the news, to talk a lot about your tours. It is a better, doing it on one's own can be very, very difficult and frustrating and dumb, frankly.
I think you can have a well-trained narrator, a guide. I mean, I don't think there's a substitute for it. In the same way that someone's ill-informed, you might be better off just not going.
But
with a well-informed guide, and we have so many great opportunities to do that in this city, it's the best way to see it.
Well, I just wrote about Liz Garibay, who...
I know Liz.
You do. Yeah. Liz worked for Chicago History Museum or whatever. I call it the Historical Society, and she occasionally does... I think History on Tap is her company, and she is like you. You are kindred spirits, man. She loves history. She just did a tour yesterday of four notable old town saloons, all of which I know way, way too well, starting at Twin Anchors.
Oh, and then
going to Marge's, and then going to whatever it's called, Corcoran's, which used to be the Earl of Old Town, and then ending up at the Ale House. I don't know how many people were on this tour, but I know they were enlightened.
I hope they like the paintings.
Huh?
I hope they like
Bruce,
the paintings. Yeah.
The great Bruce Elliott. Great Bruce Elliott, the writer, novelist, visual artist. He's everything. Max Grinnell's going to be here for this whole hour. We're going to get after a short commercial break and then the news. We'll figure out how you can get in touch with him to take tours. And also talk to him about his relationship with One Book, One Chicago and how that came to be. So please stay tuned.
They asked me how I knew my true love was true.
Those are the voices of Tom Michael and Becky Menzie. They perform around town together a lot. But they have a new show called The Piano Men, the music of Barry Manilow, Michael Feinstein, and Billy Joel. It's going to be every Saturday. It was yesterday, but every Saturday for the rest of April at Davenport's. Just go to davenportspianobar.com. They are really worth seeing. And Max Grinnell is worth listening to. He loves Chicago in the most unabashed, spread-the-gospel way. He loves to tour people around this amazing city. You now, Max, are, and you can go to theurbanologist.com, because that's where a lot of information about Max is and the upcoming tours. But you're involved in the One Book, One Chicago extravaganza every year, sometimes twice a year. The mayor, I guess, picks a book that he wants all of Chicago to read. It's a grand, wonderful idea. The latest is The Third Coast by Tom Dijah. How did you get involved? What are you doing with this thing?
It's great. I've done some programming for Chicago Public in the past, and my first book 15 years ago, Hyde Park, about Hyde Park, could have never happened without the folks at Special Collections, Andrea Telly, never could have happened. So I've done some talks from over the years, Chicago history, Chicago's public art, and they reached out to me and said, they told me Tom's book, and they said, would you like to do some programming about it?
So
Let's do over 30 programs. So I've been giving talks on the history of Chicago public art, 20 moments in Chicago's 20th century, and then we have conversation discussion about what would you add, what did I omit, and we've had amazing turnout. And last week gave a walk through Rogers Park based on, in part, my own research. And speaking of great Chicago journalists, the book Old Chicago Houses by John Drury.
John Drury,
who wrote for the Daily News for decades.
Yes, he did.
And we had 45 people in the rain.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was fantastic.
You sense that does sound great. And this, what a great project for you, too.
Yeah, because and we have two more weeks left, too.
You get to be creative about the whole thing. You're having, when was this, April 7th is another 20 Moments thing. Then you're doing, there's a Jefferson Park thing. There's an industry art and public space thing. A walk through the back of the yards.
I was there today doing recon.
Saturday, April 9th at 10 a.m. What's there? I know,
it's a great question because it is, and I've gotten this via email, folks reaching out. What's there? It's a working class community.
Yep.
You know, you don't have Cyrus McCormick's house tucked behind a Lowry steak.
Yes, exactly.
The neat thing, I think, is a lot of great new public art. Some stuff for the Chicago Public Mural Group on Hedges Elementary School. There's a brand new high school that's part of the Chicago Public Library branch right there at 47th and Hoyne. So we're going to go over to the railroad right away, talk a little bit about the history of the trains, transform the community, talk about, we might have people who might not even know what's the yards.
Yeah, right.
We've had people from Dubuque to Dubai on these. So, local people, the Canaryville tour, that's a daunting tour. We know people, they stay in Canaryville.
Yeah.
So we had people who lived there almost twice as long as I've been alive. And, you know, you're coming to their community and, woof, you know, this isn't like the comment section online.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, what are you're talking about the International Amphitheater. And these people went there dozens of times.
Yeah.
So I should say I went there once for the Mexican Rodeo and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
It's been amazing. And on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday at 5:30, there's one that I cannot mess up. It's 20 plus years of walking through the loop, a personal history. So I know that one. I know that one.
Well, but how fabulous, because I think, you know this better than anybody, that most of us live our lives in very prescribed lanes. We go to this, we walk this route to get to this place or take this train to get to this place. We go to this restaurant because it's our favorite restaurant. And it's always, I had the incredible advantage with Chuck Osgood for all those years riding sidewalks to just get in a car and go anywhere we wanted to go. Mm. But I think people don't realize what an organic city this is. You can go to any neighborhood and it's changed.
Right. And humans are creatures of habit. So breaking off, going down a different street, you know, you always go on North Sheffield, you know, go down Orchard, you know, move around a little bit. You know, if you always take the same, it's difficult because everyone's pressed for time. But we're in a big city. We're taking advantage of the density and diversity to do it. So, this has been like a dream come true. I've been everywhere from Norwood Park to Hegwisch. And I think I've been to Hegwisch twice in 22 years. And it's a different world down there.
Oh, it is. It's fascinating.
It's
fascinating.
The Ford Motor Plant.
And, wait till that neighborhood changes when somebody can figure out what to do with the old steelworks. The old U.S. steel site. You basically have a new city waiting to happen down there.
Size of the loop, and they put some stuff down there, the Solo Paper Cup Factory and a park. But there's still, tremendous opportunity, and as people look around for more affordable neighborhoods, and it's really exciting. And these walks and talks, talking about 20 moments in Chicago in the 20th century, there's a couple that people would probably expect: publication of the jungle, election of Mayor Harold Washington. But there's other ones that get
the creation of Playboy magazine. That's part of Tom's book.
It regrettably it's not, though. It's funny because at the Hyde Park talk, people said, "Are we going to go to where he wrote the first issue?" And we had someone who'd been there since 1945, and he knew that had happened in the 6100 block of South Harper.
See, I think it's very timely because, you know, Playboy is up for sale and the mansion is up for sale.
Right.
And that is it's a huge part of Tom's book, too.
Yeah, that's Third Coast. Maybe I should put that moment in there. I think we might have to do
that. How many tours have you done for the One Book, One Chicago?
We have given, 18.
Wow. 18
different tours, no repeats. So it's been delving into my own research, new research, and this communion with place.
Yeah. Have you met Tom?
I have. We've spoken on the phone.
A good guy.
That's about it. So,
he's a good guy. And that is, once again, a good, good, good book. When you give, you will give. I mean, if someone who owned a company, let's say, and said, oh, man, I've just hired about 10 new people, and they don't know Chicago. And, you know, to my mind, the best, most valuable thing that they could do would be to call you and say, hey, we've just hired 10 people. Can you show them around? We have a place in the South Loop, and will you take them and give them a sense of neighborhood? Does that happen often?
It does happen, and I'm always welcome. I accommodate all number of groups, needs, interests, specialty tours, and that's... it's part of my bread and butter, and I love it. Different groups, law firms, and
that's
people
a good
who are looking
one.
For
firms.
that kind of unique experience.
Well, to give and it gives. I mean, obviously they're hiring people for whatever jobs, lawyers or businessmen of some kind, that they're smart. It would give these people sort of an immediate expertise in whatever area they're working and maybe living. But it also removes what I ever think about any new place. People are fearful of the new.
Absolutely.
They are fearful of people who don't look like them. They're fearful of strangers. And they're fearful of turning a corner if they don't know. You know what I mean? They don't have a sense.
Yeah.
And I don't care what guidebook you may read about Chicago. Unless you're out there walking around and feeling it and getting from someone like you a sense of it, that's why people cocoon themselves.
Yeah, and I think it's easier to do with, you know, it sound like, you know, to beat a dead horse, but, you know, people, most of their media images of the South Side, in quotes, are of violence, murder, mayhem.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those other stories. And I've had the same thing with students, because, you know, part of the year I teach at the University of Chicago,
sure.
who haven't been to the Northwest Side. They haven't been to the West Side. They haven't been to South Chicago. And to get that sense of what's going on there, how are people living, and really what's that kind of community?
You know, the whole sense of, like, who am I sharing this planet with, man? We should know this kind of thing. We got to take a little commercial break, then we'll come back and talk more. Max Fernell and I will fix the world. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Max is here for about another 8 minutes, and he wants to read you something. And you know me, anything goes on this show. Max, what are you going to read?
It's a piece each one of us who is participating, each of the authors in the One Book program, was asked to write a reflection on the theme, Chicago, the city that gives. So this is a piece, as I thought about coming to Chicago in 1994 to go to college, this is kind of what I was on my mind.
Oh, fantastic.
I thought about it. Yeah. Thank you. In an era of self-reflection, my mind stumbled along this theme to what Chicago had given me. After all, the cultural cornucopia that has sprung forth from Chicago's L-bound core and its expansive grid is well documented by others. I've been here over 2 decades, so I'll pick out a few strands amidst the many baubles that Chicago has presented me through long, peripatetic walks. My first walk through Chicago gave me quite a bit, and subsequent walks have been variations on this theme of jarring transition amid the city's built environment. I arrived on a hot and sticky day in 1994 to start college at the University of Chicago, which has been described by one wag as the greatest gathering of juvenile delinquents since the Children's Crusades. After dropping my bags in a former hotel palace on Lake Michigan that had seen better days, I began to walk. Yes, I had walked before during my youth in Seattle, but never quite like this. As I walked down East 55th Street in the direction of Hyde Park's heart, I passed a man in a wheelchair coming out of a dive bar, a clutch of brownstones, several Thai restaurants with wonderfully pungent aromas passing out their wide-open doorways, and a glamorous terracotta-clad apartment building with a lobby that looked as tired as I felt. Mind you, this was just the first couple of blocks on my way out west. Imagine my delight when I crossed under a decrepit-looking railroad overpass and heard the rumble of commuter trains. There was simply nothing like this back in the Emerald City. I felt as if the entire structure might collapse if I dallied but an extra moment. As I moved on, I came out into the light of a widened 55th Street that seemed to say, "Something's changed." It had all changed, indeed. It was at this point that 55th Street had been expanded as part of urban renewal. That process of reducing, simmering, and evicting buildings and people by any means necessary some four decades before. I walked west in front of the Hyde Park Shopping Center, which by that point was home to a garden variety Walgreens, a candy store, Conan Stern's Clothes for Men, the Hyde Park Cooperative Grocery Store, and a charming Woolworths that had a tiny food counter disarmingly close to where they kept the pets for sale. I looked back under the 55th Street underpass and thought, what a difference. To my east was the motley crew of buildings that had a bit of dated charm, and to the west was the brave new world that urban renewal had made, complete with IMPEI-designed apartments, plentiful parking, and shiny new buildings that said, "Welcome to the mid-century." During my walk west to campus, I continued to think about that transition between these two built environments, two different ways of urbanism, two contrasting styles of what Chicago was and what it hoped to be. I still think of this walk frequently amidst the many walks that have taken me to throughout every corner of the city. Chicago, I thank you for what you have given me. I'm forever in your debt.
That is really lovely. That is especially lovely because, man, do I know that stretch of 55th Street. The guy was coming out of the Cove. I know that stretch. That is a beautiful that's a beautiful piece of writing, and I think that's got to be the aesthetic that you bring to the tours, too. I mean, you want these things to be meaningful for people on a real city kind of level rather than just, you know, you regurgitating facts about, well, this is, the Chicago Fire took place in 1871. It burned up to here and it burned down to there. That is a lovely, lovely piece. Who'd you write that for?
That's for the Chicago Public Library.
Wow. Wow.
And I sat down and, you know, some edits, some snips, some this, some that, and it just flowed. Thank you, Rick.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure, Max. You are a good writer. I always knew that, too. But you also are, your website is theurbanologist.com, and that word, urbanologist, can mean a lot of things. It can mean, you know, someone, I think it can mean a lot of things. It can mean someone who studies the urban environment, like a biologist or something. But I also think it can mean someone who interprets, because what occurs to me, being a Chicagoan and growing up here, that any urban environment is always open to new interpretations because it's always changing, man.
Right.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, and you're... whether it's the stuff of the things around us, the sidewalk, the buildings, the setback, the things that sometimes my students probably roll their eyes at when I talk about, is what are we bringing to it? You know, age, ethnicity, orientation, suburban, urban, rural, international, provincial.
Yeah.
You know, what are we bringing to the experience? And that's the thing I think that makes it so exciting. We're in it, right? Someone made these buildings. I like to take my students to Streeterville, and I say, there's a real Captain Streeter.
Yeah.
He's a colorful fellow.
Yes, he was. He could not live here now.
Right. Yes. He could not. I don't know if him and his dog would be welcome in a condo.
Or his wife, either. Right. They're one of the great characters in the history of this city. It's almost, it doesn't feel like, it's not going to feel like it tomorrow, but I hope today gave you a taste of spring. It's a great time to walk around the city of Chicago, and you could find no better walking companion than Max Grinnell.